All right, so welcome to the second day and final day of our CS50 boot camp. Much like we do in lectures, we thought we'd try to grab your attention right from the get-go, as by killing the lights and looking at a student's very first day in CS50. Big thanks to CS50's production team for that one. So we've got an exciting, if brief, day for you today. Here we are creating a CS50 community, largely using this morning session as an opportunity for Q&A. We plucked off some representative questions from the board. We'll address those specifically, as well as invite other questions. We'll then transition to a discussion and a hands-on opportunity for grading, how we approach it, how you might approach it, how you might vary from it, and to try to give you a sense of the mental model that we ourselves use. And then we'll adjourn for a conclusion, if your flights and such allow, right across the street at the Harvard Faculty Club for a final lunch. But first, a few thanks, if I can. We have our whole production team who are almost always behind the camera. Dan C., Ian, Scully, Jordan, all in back there. Thank you so much for streaming this live. If you missed any of this, it will live on at cs50.wiki. A big thanks to Elise for organizing so many of the logistics, and Colton for DJing, and Chang for making the postcards that you received on Wednesday night, and more. Michael for making those widgets, so a big thanks to those folks as well. And then everyone who spoke and contributed over the past day, Jason, Dan A., Davin, Winston, Dino, Sean, and Zamyla. A big thanks to our building sponsors who allowed us in for some VIP tours and access, Lamont, Widener, Sanders, Annenberg, and the Faculty Club. A huge thanks to our special friends from Microsoft and from MDC, Nacho, Bjorn, and Saadi. Thank you so much for coming so far, especially to join us here. And truly the fellow who has made all of this happen in quite short order as well. Huge thanks to Doug for making CS50 AP. So one of the questions that arose on the board and over time has been like, why are we doing this and where did this all come from? And it's certainly, I think, consistent with CS50's history of open courseware. In fact, in 2007, when I first got involved with the course, one of the first things we did was put the course online through Harvard's Extension School in a more traditional online education offering. But we also realized that the marginal effort, the marginal cost to just putting it online more broadly for anyone on the internet was so incredibly low and obvious that we just threw the switch in hopes that someone might actually take an interest who's not actually taking a more formal curriculum. And indeed, people seem to start tuning in, not only students and teachers. And so when I received a few emails a few years later, just a few months ago now, The first of those emails was from our own Nacho here, who wrote, "Greetings, David. My team at Microsoft is focused on creating meaningful learning experience for kids ages 13 through 18 who are interested in computer science as well as their teachers. Our goal is to bring quality beginner developer curriculum to students globally, and we think that your CS50 course would be a powerful tool to make available to students in our target age group of 13 to 18. Literally just days prior had I gotten a note from Bjorn, who was going to be in town, and it had been the supervisor for one of our teaching fellows who had been interning at Microsoft some time ago. And he too similarly struck up a conversation about K-12 and Microsoft's efforts and CS50's efforts. And then fast forward to just March 9th of 2015, when longstanding teaching fellow Doug wrote me to say, with the subject line of seeking your opinion and possibly a letter of reference, he says, "Hi, David. This might seem as it's coming a bit out of left field, but since I've been on the staff of CS50 for so long, hopefully it won't seem too surprising. Obviously, I went to law school. I'm a lawyer, and that's what I'm most qualified to do. But here's the problem. I kind of hate it. Being a lawyer, I mean. I don't hate all of it. I love working with people and helping them with their problems. And every year I continue to do CS50 on the side, I realize how much more fun I have teaching it than doing my day job. I always look forward to the fall, and I'm so glad to be working on it during the spring too now. It's what I seem to be enjoying most." So we took a dinner, and I agreed to write him a letter of recommendation for a local high school that was recruiting and had a job opportunity so he could make this life shift. And between Doug's note and Bjorn's note and Nacho's note and, frankly, the history of the course and just putting content out there, we realized there was this wonderful opportunity, honestly, to forge ahead. And I had known the folks at Duke University, Owen Astrakhan, a professor of computer science there, who for some 5+ years has been working with other faculty around the world on the new APCS principles curriculum that a few years ago just felt like way far off. And when it dawned on me that, wow, this thing launches in just the year, we seem to have all of the right players involved, just these three here, and then 100 or so folks who will return in the fall as well. So that's it in a nutshell. It just felt like the right thing to do and a wonderful convergence of all the right people in all the right places. So we're hopeful that along with our friends at Berkeley and co.org and bunches of other places, we can try to help reboot, if you will, a student's interest in CS, particularly all the younger. So that's why we are here today. But thank you for being here as well today, and realize that though you've seen just a few faces the past couple of days, there's a whole team behind the scenes, and as best we can tell, there's thousands of people online who are willing to contribute to your efforts and to support your students in those various communities that we alluded to earlier. So as for Microsoft's role, allow me to introduce Bjorn and Nacho again to say a little something about the support that they and Microsoft itself is eager to provide you as teachers within your own school systems.
So it's great to be here, and I have to say, I think like before February this year, I've never been to Boston, and this is the fourth time this year. So I had watched the Muppets movie like a year ago, and now I actually recognize the buildings, which is amazing. So for me, like it's really a 0 to 100 in 6 months or 8 months, because like I actually changed my job at Microsoft to come to the education team so that I could work with CS50 because of CS50. So it's kind of like a really weird thing. I've been for 22 years at Microsoft in engineering teams, so I've written code, I've supervised people who write code, and so on. And after 22 years, I decided to completely change my role to actually do stuff around the open courseware. I never thought that I would ever stand here and talk to you at Harvard about working with Harvard on a curriculum together. And I'm so excited. The reason why I'm so excited about the high school opportunity, because my kids are 16 and 18. One just graduated from high school. The other one still is in high school, obviously. And they're attending a STEM school. It's a public school within the Lake Washington School District. Very rich school district within, like in Redmond, and they got lots of money from Microsoft too. And but the curriculum, the computer science curriculum at the STEM school is handing the kids a piece of paper with Python code, and then they have to type it in, and that's their computer science curriculum. And this is something I'm so eager to change, and all of you are the seed for this change. And so for everything else, like for the support that we can provide, I will hand off to Nacho, because I'm just the guy who's managing the technical team, but she is an educator and she knows how to support you.
Thanks, Bjorn. So being here at Harvard with CS50, there's a big personal piece for me too. I'm a Harvard Graduate School of Education grad myself. I received my EDM here, and so this whole entire, just working with CS50 is like coming home to me. Everything from the smell of campus to to being in such a creative and vibrant learning community. And the academic team at Microsoft, you know, we have a choice. There are times when we feel like we need to start from scratch and build a curriculum to suit educators' needs. We're serving educators globally under, you know, every circumstance you can think of. People who, you know, are still using Windows 7. People who don't have, people who maybe have 120 students and one educator, and they have internet in a lab 30 minutes a week. I mean, really extreme circumstances. So sometimes we're designing curriculum to meet those needs. And then there are times when we look around and we say, we can't possibly create something in the case of CS50. We can't possibly duplicate or even come close to what's going on. Let's find a way to partner. And that's really what led to, you know, that email that David read to CS50. We looked all around at what was going on in terms of computer science education and what was happening in online education, and just CS50 was the standout. So it, for me, I feel as an educator, we're just sitting in the best spot. And every day I get so excited coming to work. I get to talk to all of the educators in the pilot. You know, I'm looking under rocks, finding more people who, you know, who want to come on board. And it's just been this incredible groundswell. Within the company, it's also been a groundswell, really across the company. We've got CS50 alums sitting in all different seats at Microsoft. And I sent an email out to Crimson at Microsoft, and they stepped up and they said, you tell us what you need us to do, and we'll do it for the students and for the educators. So I'm working currently with Skype in the classroom, and those CS50 alums, they'll be surfaced on Skype, and you'll learn about all of this. I'll be posting it in our CS50 AP discussion area. They're volunteering for all kinds of things. If you're throwing a hackathon and you want to have, you know, a real Microsoft developer there, or if your kids are stuck on a particular problem set, they've offered to do office hours. Some of them are looking to do something where they're matched with a particular educator. Some of them would like to, they really want to do the events. They want to be there for a puzzle day. Some of them, you know, oh, I can't be there physically, but I want to be there online. So these are all ways that we can help support your efforts and the students' efforts. And it's just spreading. So their friends and their colleagues found out about CS50, and they said, well, can we do it? We're not CS50 alums. So we need to hear from you what your needs are as you go to, you know, run an event, or as you just run into stumbling blocks. Like you find, oh my gosh, I do need to have an office hours, or my kids just really want to connect with a real, you know, a CS50 alum and have that particular person help me with something. So the more I can hear from you about ways that we can support you, you know, we're in real pilot mode here. So I would encourage you, there is nothing that you shouldn't ask for. The worst case scenario is Bjorn and I go back to headquarters, you know, and we try our best to make something happen, and we're not able to just hit it spot on for you. But if you don't ask, we'll never know what your needs are. And you'll never hurt my feelings. I did 2 tours of duty as a middle school principal. So like my feelings have already been really hurt and all that. And I've had a lot of therapy, so I've, you know, I've bounced back quite strongly. So, you know, if something's not going your way, you can always, you know, share it with me, because we really are here to serve you. And Microsoft has a deep, deep commitment, in particular under Satya, to really step things up for computer science education. So let us know what we can do to help you, and we'll do our best to do that.
Invite Doug and Davin and Nacho back up so that we can have you drive this conversation, and in the absence of explicit questions, what we'll do is address a few of the representative questions, but realize that those untouched on the board at the moment are still on our radar, and we'll follow up in the form of the wiki or discussions, and some of them indeed came up in conversation yesterday. Are there questions, concerns, some of which we'll try to answer now, or we'll cut back to everyone? Yeah.
And so how do we reach students that have no computer at home? and that don't have internet at home. And what I hope is that, you know, that this course is something that can help to kind of, you know, level that technological gap versus almost recreating the reality that we see with the industry today.
It's a hard question, to be honest. And I think once we have a year of experience and data under our belt, we'll get a sense of realistically how much time our teachers and classrooms finding for students to actually work on the computers themselves. One of the things we're hoping will help significantly toward that end is the fact that whereas we try to cram the course's curriculum into just 12 or so weeks, at least over a typical high school year, there's more time to play with, and therefore there's more class time to play with than we have ourselves here. And so we hope through this amalgam of lectures plus sections plus walkthroughs, aka just teaching a typical classroom environment, that there'll be a lot more opportunity at the high school level to do the requisite work and to support the students, not in a home environment, but in that classroom environment.
Just a follow-up.
One thing that I've noticed is, a student might not have a computer, and they might not have internet access at home, but they will have a smartphone. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there's anything that can be downloaded onto a smartphone that maybe could be worked off offline so it doesn't chew up all of their data, where they could at least attempt to, type a code or, is there anything where they could at least, one thing you could tell them is, well, go home and write it on paper, then bring back and we can plug it in. But is there anything that is available for that could be downloaded, taken offline, where they could type code and have a similar experience and then kind of feel like they, maybe when they connect back to a Wi-Fi, they can then, upload that or something?
It's a really good question, and I think we'll have to noodle on it. Certainly our moving toward a web-based infrastructure as opposed to the appliance help is a step toward that. In the short term, I don't think we'll have a concrete solution there, so I think for us, the best answer here would be for us to do some due diligence as to what tools do exist. I mean, there are entities like Codecademy and Code.org that have been especially focused on broadly accessible web-based tools, and so we'll see if in the short term we can at least point folks at those kinds of resources, whether it's something textual or at least sort of limited but in nonetheless interactive exercises. So we'll follow up and link to those, and folks are welcome to share here too. Yeah. Jason, do you mind helping with the mic?
My question is two parts. The first is it assumed that every classroom has a computer for each student?
It's a good question. That's certainly ideal. We're not assuming as much. It's certainly requisite that each student or each pair of students will have sufficient access to a computer, whether that's in the classroom or not. We in CS50's lectures, and even to some extent in sections, don't require or expect the students to use their laptops in those aspects of the course. Office hours, absolutely, where office hours, again, are their hands-on opportunities. So we would really defer to each teacher's environment as to if and when that's necessary. That's not a strict assumption on our part. Doing the problem sets, yes. Every other aspect of the class, no.
Thank you. My second question is, what or do you have any plans for making this class accessible to non-native English speakers?
Non-native English speakers. So as best we can, this is something that we've tried to address organically, whereby we have some amazing folks on the internet who have happily volunteered their time over the past few years to translate the course accurately into other languages. We use Google Translations for the lectures themselves, but it's surely imperfect, but at least it's automated. Gabriel, one of our head teaching fellows and undergraduates, actually has done the most robust step toward that, translating literally every lecture and every problem set into Portuguese in his case. frankly, all other N-1 of our gracious volunteers underestimate just how much time is involved in doing something like that. So it's on our radar, but this is really a support question and I think an available bandwidth question. And so if you know folks or have a present or former student or future students who might like to contribute along these lines, we have done our best to facilitate. We have a web-based tool called DotSub that we've used to provide such volunteers with a nice, easy-to-use web-based interface that shows you the English transcripts on one side and lets you put the corresponding language on the other side, so we can provide that kind of support. But it's a hard task. We would love to do it, but we need those commitments from folks.
I was going to add from a Microsoft perspective, that's something that Microsoft has a lot of experience with, and you know, we're looking at things in terms of phases. So we're in the pilot phase now, and before we ever localize a curriculum, and we localize into, I mean, we have 13 core languages that we localize into, we need to have that curriculum nailed down. So we're really looking at this year shoring things up in this pilot and making sure that the pacing and the directions and all of the feedback that you give goes into that curriculum before we can kick into that next phase and step it up a gear.
And I received several emails from folks who are not able to be here today who are expressed interest in translating into Spanish, Afrikaans, and Albanian. Off the top of my head, I remember. So there's definitely interest out there in doing it, and I think that there will be hopefully some sort of groundswell volunteer effort that will help us to reach languages that we otherwise wouldn't be able to because we don't have folks on our own staff who know those languages.
We spent 2 months last year trying to find somebody to translate into Mandarin Chinese, so if you know anybody who speaks Mandarin Chinese, that'd be great as well, because we weren't able to find anybody.
Yeah.
So I'm bringing an intro course to my school. So I thought this is an awesome opportunity, which it is. And thank you so much because you've shaped so much of what I'm going to do. My biggest question going into this was, what language do you teach? And I thought, like, when I would Google search it, I'd find out this is the language you should first teach in an intro course. And everyone does it differently. You guys, MIT uses Python. Stony Brook on Long Island uses Java. Why C?
It's a good question, definitely an FAQ. I always concede a priori that we could probably teach the class in most any language, and I'd like to think nearly as well. Deliberately, though, we've stuck with C because it affords us an opportunity to do things from the ground up. In my mind, we've always aspired to train computer scientists and computer engineers and not software developers alone. And toward that end, I think there's great value in really understanding, without quite going as low as assembly language, which I think is a little too arcane syntactically for most students to grok early on, to really understand what's going on underneath the hood, I think is hugely valuable. And this is manifest, for instance, when we start to talk about fairly sophisticated data structures in CS50, and we do trees and tries and hash tables in particular, and then we context switch between week 6 and 7 and then 8 or 9, whereas to implement a hash table for our misspellings problem set, PSET 5, students have to write several 100-200 lines of codes potentially, and then a week, 2 weeks later, when we introduce PHP and JavaScript, one line of code gives you a hash table. But you have an appreciation, we hope, at that point for exactly what's going on. And when we say that, yeah, that's constant time, it's not really constant time lookup. In fact, there's a great deal of complexity. It might devolve into something linear. And beyond having those algorithmic discussions with students, also being able to talk about memory management and what's going on underneath the hood and why so many servers and software programs are still being cracked by buffer overflow exploits and the like. And so I'm much more confident in sort of testifying that this student is prepared to go off into the world now and bootstrap himself or herself to other languages and other environments. And there too, C is so syntactically similar to most every descendant procedural language, and even a lot of OO languages, that it's really, I think, a great stepping stone toward other languages. And indeed, you will not find sort of a big, bold-faced explanation of what language CS50 teaches, because we do teach C for most of it, but we also deliberately throw in Scratch and PHP and JavaScript and SQL, plus some HTML and CSS, so that we don't have the narrative of, oh, I learned C this semester. And I think Doug said this yesterday, or Davin said this yesterday, because we want students learning how to program and not relying on us to teach them those languages.
Awesome, thank you. Follow-up question would be the AP computer science exam. I heard a rumor that they're going to get away from using Java. Is that true?
AP computer science A class will continue to be Java as far as we're aware. The computer science principles exam is language neutral because There are at least 8 different implementing curricula we're aware of, and some of them use drag and drop programming languages, some of them use C, some of them use Python. So it's deliberately language neutral. There's no specified language set for that one.
So I feel like the conflict for high school teachers is, you know, it's not just about this one course, but it's about a sequence of courses you wanna create. Like, I'm gonna start with the intro course, and then we're gonna figure out what are gonna be the next sequence, and computer science A will be one of them, which is Java. And then the argument you get is, well, how come you're not just teaching Java from the get-go so that they're that much better prepared for it?
But I think there, too, I would tweak your wording, not just teaching Java. Like, I would cross that out and say, why aren't you teaching object-oriented programming in that case, which is what APA in theory is hopefully more about. The reality is, for us, we have just one semester. And for us, I think starting with procedural and then stumbling across problems where it makes sense, both in terms of the scale of the software and the style of the software, to then introduce a solution to a problem, which might be an OO paradigm, is the right way to do things. And so, frankly, too, and this is a good opportunity just for me to pluck off one of these post-its, which said, the CS50X is more aligned with APCSA. The new APCS principles was designed to be more broad and to limit intense programming. Will the CS50 AP course be simplified a lot from the CS50X course, and will include some more data compression, internet, big data topics? So to those last questions, yes. And one, in fact, the mapping that Doug alluded to yesterday of CS50's existing curriculum to the APCSP curriculum framework, we're almost there, nearly at 100%. But there's absolutely some holes that we intend in CS50 on campus and CS50X on edX to merge into the class so that it's 100% aligned. But to the first part of the question, we do intend and expect CS50 AP to be among the most, if not the most, rigorous incarnation of APCS principles, and dare say within time, I wouldn't be surprised if it is perceived as a superset of CS principles and APCSA, with the caveat that we have no intention right now of going into OO for lack of sufficient time. And so that's kind of my answer there. And I think it'll be up to each teacher in school, certainly, to decide, does it make sense for a student to take APCSA before or after or not at all? We do intend for for CS50 AP to stand alone as a rigorous introduction to computer science that students can then use as a stepping stone to collegiate studies in any number of higher level courses.
Your input on this. I teach a course that's taken by every kid in the school. You know, it's sort of a, it really, you know, before there was a CS principles, I just cover a lot of the things just because I think it's interesting stuff and because nobody else in the school has a clue about it, so I can pretty much do what I want. I look at the stuff you've had, and I think it's wonderful. I think the rigor is admirable, but I know that I would be torturing a significant portion of the kids. I think they would really despair of trying to figure out. So some of the things that make this great are just, you know, people's ability to, they can solve these problems, but some kids really are going to suffer, and they didn't sign up to be put through this. You know, when they came to this school, they weren't looking to go through this. I'm just curious as to what you would, which parts of this you think are things that everybody should have.
I mean, I don't mean to react in opposition, but I mean, I think this has not been designed from the ground up to be a class for Harvard kids or Yale kids. I mean, to Saadi's comments yesterday about the community college system in Florida, the fact that we've been not just open courseware, but open enrollment through Harvard's Extension School for some time, is kind of my general answer to that concern. It's absolutely going to be painful for some students and an intense and very challenging experience that many of them might very well want to drop out of. And in fact, we've seen that, and I know some of the students now from MDC who thankfully were sort of reinfused with energy when we popped down there for a lecture and a CS50 hackathon that we saw glimpses of yesterday. I think there are, for time's sake, there are certainly tweaks you can make during the semester, for instance, spending a little less time on one topic or another, or maybe zooming through some of the earlier PSETs so as to spend more time on the more complex material. But the reality is, the course is what it is because it's what we hope every student, irrespective of their educational background, is going to should have under their belt over some amount of time. And I think the key ingredient for us is not so much tailoring the content to individual students, but providing the requisite support structure to get them through what we hope is and what we do feel is a core curriculum.
Just kind of push back with some statistics we always use. Like 73% of people at Harvard who take CS50 have never programmed before. Like when I took CS50, When I took CS50 back in 2010, I was a Japanese major, so I had no kind of background with computer science. Holler. So I think exactly what David said, you know, the material is very difficult and people will have, they might not have a predilection towards CS or even STEM learning, but the material is there and the material is accessible and it might be harder for other people, but it's definitely attainable. So it's a goal that everybody should be able to attain. It shouldn't be outside the reach. Oh, I just can't do this. Like, it might be a little bit more difficult, but it's definitely a goal everybody can kind of get to.
And I think that's something we've really aspired to in CS50, which was highlighted in one of David's slides at the very beginning of yesterday's session, was one hallmark of the course is its accessibility. We deliberately design materials so that even the student who has no programming experience whatsoever coming in feels like they have support and they don't feel under pressure and they don't feel threatened. And I think that that's something we really try and do is open the class up so that even those students who are among those less comfortable, which I think comprise the large portion of our demographic now, still feel like it's a course that they can get through, even if it's...
But they did elect to take it, though.
They did elect to take it.
That seems like that tilts things somewhat. Kids, in my case, I'm talking about 10th graders.
I see. So the key ingredient here is the fact that they would have to take it in your...
They have to, and I want to... I mean, I know it would be a great experience if they had it in them, but so many of them have so many pressures on them already, and it's just, you know, if you made running a marathon, I mean, I'm sure that's a great experience for people.
I see.
And I'm sure that just about everybody can do it. But damn, that may not be what you had in mind, you know?
Let's take a response here.
That would be a great opportunity. I think that would be a great opportunity to pair students up. Because those who do want to go into programming, inevitably, and I hope Microsoft, you can acknowledge this, will be working in teams. And also, it's going to enhance their learning to be explaining it to someone else. And you might just change your grading rubric there. There's two ways. One, less emphasis on the completion of the programmings and more the attempt and working at it. And your grading would be that the team programming effort. And it would get them to talk about it to each other. That's one of the things that we've seen when we've got some computer science classes already, that some kids can sit there and code their little brains out, but their ability to communicate it to someone else, and we impress upon them, you're going to have to go out and explain to someone what your code was and what it did. And by pairing them up with someone who's struggling and having them working with it, they're finding they have to find the way to voice it and be able to explain what they did, that pseudocode that they should have written, and mostly they didn't. So that would just be a good way to get over that hump of, okay, you had to take it, you're not really going to go into programming, but you need to understand it. And I've had this argument with my engineering students when I make them do Snap, similar to Scratch, with their robotics. And they kind of go, I'm not going to be a software engineer. I said, yeah, but 99% of the people out there, the work that you do is going to involve a computer at some point. And if you understand it, your ability to then explain to them what you need them to do to program is going to actually work. So while they might fight it to say, I don't want to be a programmer, they will probably talk to one at some point in their career. So by pairing them up and getting them to talk, takes the pressure off. You don't have to be the only one to code it, but they're still gaining value. That's my opinion.
I mean, I teach high school. I taught it for 20 years, and I've taught math, and trust me, they're taking it because they have to. A lot of those kids don't want to be there, you know? I mean, it's the nature of being a high school teacher. So the way I always look at it is if they walk out of my classroom knowing more than what they did when they walked in, then I did my job. And so with this class, there's going to be a lot of things, like you said, like hash tables. I don't even know what a freaking hash table is, for God's sakes. I got to teach myself that, you know. They might not get that, but they might get some other things. And if they're getting anything, then I think it's beneficial.
And I realized I miscalibrated my early remarks, missing that key ingredient that you said of the students having to take it. And I would say, one, I would have to concede that I think I would have to noodle on how best to recalibrate my own approach to an audience that has to be there, since right now we enjoy an audience who we have hopefully incentivized and inspired to take the class. So in part, my preliminary answer would be exactly that. I mean, we front load so much attention to building excitement around the course and the material. And so even if the inputs to the problem are a non-trivial number of students who don't want to be there, then my first goal, I would think on my side, would be excite those students to want to be there.
I think anybody could get excited by that kind of format. It's like, you know, what could we do without having to go through the hash tables and pointers and stuff like that? I mean, just there's a core of great stuff here. I'm completely excited about that. I'm just trying to say, how can I make?
I have a suggestion.
Yeah, please.
Maybe you explain to them how their lives can change by taking the class. Because the truth is that, you know, they can go the rest of their lives regretting it. And I do ERP and CRM implementations all the time. And I go to someone in accounting and I have to talk to them about their processes. And it's exactly what you said. If they don't understand how the computer works, they have a really hard time of giving you the information you need to make that program work. So.
And right now, we don't have too many stories from high school age students, but the production team and we have been capturing on camera anytime we meet folks who have taken CS50 or some variant thereof and then have gone off to do something amazing quite quickly. If you go on YouTube and search for CS50 stories, we have a couple such videos, which are meant to be not at all about the course, but entirely about what that person has done as a result of an introduction to computer science. And we're hopeful, too, those kinds of stories will incentivize. And if you recall Week Zero's lecture where Susan Wojcicki, who's certainly a special case of where someone has gone, the CEO of YouTube right now, I mean, she, too, got her start by taking a class called CS50 at Harvard College, even though she was not a STEM major, and it surely put her onto this path. And so we try to build that interest by way of proxies in that way.
Yeah, I'm going to add a layer to this because I'm going to be introducing this as well, and I'll be in the same boat where I'll have kids who are already put in a class, and they're not going to be expecting this. So in addition to not wanting to be there, I'm going to have some SPED students. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you've thought about modifications for special ed.
Not much yet, to be honest. I mean, certainly something we're mindful of, but per the emails I read, for us, this is a very new initiative, so on our radar, but not certainly for September of this year. We'll get there, we hope.
And sure, because my team does a lot of interacting and data collection in terms of, you know, who's using what curriculum and what kinds of kids are succeeding. So when you say SPED students, I mean that there's a whole continuum there of challenges that students face. But in some particular cases, like let's use autism, kids who have struggled their entire careers in academia suddenly become the leaders of the class because that very grit, that ability to, you know, they've been failing constantly and they get up every day and, you know, get out the door and get to school. Suddenly they get into computer science, they get in, and it's actually a natural place for them to do quite well. So I don't know what your students look like, but I'd like to tie this all together by saying, you know, humans rise to expectations. And I've worked in both extremely competitive independent schools and, you know, Title I schools. And in both instances, I've seen expectations set here, and kids will go there. And I have also seen in the Title I school that I worked in, I saw many people say, oh, the kids can't do it. Eighth graders have a fourth grade reading level. And the expectation was set here. And that's where the kids, that's as high as they got because that they met the expectation. I think, Andy, what you're talking about, it's just the bigger problem is there's such a gap between what happens in the world of work, whether it's Microsoft or elsewhere, as Patricia's pointed out, and what goes on in the classroom. And to me, the CS50 curriculum is the perfect opportunity to push to really, like, it's a battle worth having, I think, with school administrators, with other educators, and demonstrating to students, you know, it's computational thinking we're talking about. So whether you end up being a programmer or not, that's irrelevant. But it's walking kids through those steps so that they understand. When we go out and we do focus groups with high school students, and we say, you know, we start talking about, you know, what is computer science? They have no idea that an app on the phone is actually an application, and these are high school students, and that an application involves writing code and solving problems. Like, they're missing so many little steps there. So I think by doing things like showing the videos or doing a Skype in the classroom with someone who took CS50 and then walking them through and leading them there, that's going to help open minds. But it's definitely a battle worth having. And in my experience, there are a lot of people in schools who don't really know what goes on in the world of work. And we've got to do everything we can to close that gap for these kids. Because it's, you know, even for a kid who's not at all interested, that kid still needs a job at the end of the day.
And if I could just add something here, I've heard a lot of stories as well of teachers who are in the situation where they have trimesters and they only get the students for one trimester, or they get the students for just half of the year and that's it. And this class is, of course, being designed to map to the AP Computer Science Principles curriculum, right? So it's designed for a 1 year long trajectory where at the end of the exam, it's students who've, in most cases, chosen to place themselves in an AP course, and at the end of the year are hoping to take an AP exam, pass it, and get college credit. But that means there's still so much available if you want to take some of this curriculum and just take maybe the first half of it and even explode it out even further and give kids even more time to invest in it. So it's not like you have to use the entire thing as the AP curriculum and that's what you have to drop in your classroom. There's a lot of remixing that's going to go on, and maybe for some students they just want to take the first third of the course and you want to really drill down and take things really slowly and give them that. And those resources are still there. It's not all tied as where you have to use the full 36 weeks if that's, A, doesn't fit into your schedule, or B, doesn't fit with your students. And I think that taking what we have and using it however, whatever way works best for your students is, I think, really, at the end of the day, what this mapping and everything plays down to is you have these resources at your disposal to use how you see fit. And in one way that we've recommended to use them is to line them all up and treat this as a full year, where at the end of the year, there's the carrot of the AP exam. But that's not the only way to use the curriculum. And I think we're going to see a lot of stories of how things have been remixed and changed. And I'm looking forward to hearing about them.
In fact, two of the stickies, if I can tie this together here, is one of the feature requests on the board was we could brainstorm more about methods of delivery. And then the next person just wrote, delivery, yes, with an arrow to that one. So indeed, what we're hoping arises after this weekend here is discussions on CS50, discussed not only with the 40 or so folks here, but your 40 or so counterparts who met out in Redmond, so that we can all kind of learn from each other as to what folks are thinking about, because we certainly have some skeletal ideas, the adapt or amalgams thereof that Doug addressed yesterday, but we'll be very curious to hear too ongoingly what folks are up to. And I think there's a question.
Yeah,
here.
My question was really back. Just if I take it as a semester course, a half-year course, can we still call it CS50? Branding, marketing, whatever.
Oh, sure. So we'll follow up, I think, in writing and on the wiki with more explicit and, I think, clear guidance. We will set some expectations that what is called CS50 or CS50X does mirror the full content that we expect a student to be exposed to, so that when a student at any level says, I took CS50, even if it's emblazoned on a t-shirt, that actually has some consistent semantic meaning. So let us follow up in more detail in writing on questions like that. Why don't we go in back, since we have been going up front so much.
I'm just anticipating the criticism or the critique that it's going to be leveled is that, you know, the computer science A, the criticism is, oh, it's too programming intensive, there's so much more to computer science. And I think that when people see this implementation of computer science, so they design computer science principles, just kind of get away from that. And I think when people see this implementation of computer science principles, even the non sort of programming topics, a lot of them are addressed through the lens of programming, and I think that's some critique that I'm gonna hear.
Yeah, I think it's quite fair. I think that is a manifestation of the deliberate design choice that we made for the course to be, at the end of the day, a software-driven course and not a discussion, for instance-driven course. There's absolutely ample opportunities for the latter, but the backbone of the course, per its problem sets, is absolutely software-focused, and my response to many students who feel that way or teachers is that we'd like to think that the returns are therefore so much higher. Not only are there conceptual returns for students and conceptual returns, but also practical returns. And indeed, here on campus and more generally, CS50 is meant to be a terminal class. So that, and indeed, on campus here, about 50% of the students who take CS50 every year for the past 25 years take no other computer science class. And that's in large part by design, so that those students can go back to the humanities, social sciences, physical sciences, any field that they might be interested in, at least at the college level, and have ample background with which to now go learn some MATLAB or play with Stato or some other tool and actually solve problems with more of a toolkit. So that would generally be my response, to concede, yes, that is absolutely the case, and there are alternatives that are much more focused on concepts alone to the exclusion of such a software focus, but we have tended to think that a much healthier balance of the two, if not weighted toward the hands-on portion, yields much higher returns, if at the expense of much more time on the student's part. Yeah. Oh, let's go here.
Thank you. I think you started talking about supports you guys provide non-traditional CS students. I'm particularly interested in grouping. I feel like thinking about a lot of the discussion that's happening, the interactions between the students and the classrooms, and the quality of those is really going to determine the success of this course, since we're all going to be learning as we're teaching it. And I think I can see a scenario where a teacher just says, okay, now just talk in groups. And I think being thoughtful about that and really grouping your students really, you know, consciously can lead to some stuff. So I'm wondering, what do you guys do to have sections be successful? What kind of supports do you put in, aside from the ones you've already mentioned, that make the interaction between the students themselves more successful than just the lectures?
Sure. So in terms of sectioning, like, we section based on comfortability. So you'll have more comfortable sections, less comfortable sections, somewhere in between. But in terms of groupings between students, we don't force the more comfortable students to be in groups together, force the more comfortable students to group with less comfortable students. It's usually just based upon who their friends are. And so that's kind of a more organic relationship that they build. And they're more kind of, I don't know, we find that more comfortable students tend to like to work by themselves, and it might be kind of counterintuitive to pair them with a less comfortable student, as they might just do all the work. Whereas, you know, if there's some kind of gap in skill or kind of gap in understanding, if people are close, they might help each other to come to an understanding instead of us forcing people with like very different kind of backgrounds to work together. So we don't force anybody to do anything that's not organic, and that kind of works the best for us, I think. We've kind of pushed back against partner PSETs because we found that, you know, in some later classes, when you have partner PSETs, the workload is very, you know, it's not balanced. You know, maybe I will do all the work on the PSET this week, and then you do it next week, and then we get two PSETs done, but I have a huge gap in my understanding because you did this week and I did the next week or something like that. So we've been reluctant to be like, okay, we have partner PSETs, but we definitely allow discussion and talk and help. You know, at office hours, we have TFs walk around, give walkthroughs, help all the students, but we encourage everybody to talk to their partners, talk to their friends, anybody they're sitting around the table with, talk to them, just like make new friends and kind of talk about these problems with anybody. Because when you're struggling with a problem, you know, especially in computer science, even if I don't know you, if I think you can help me, we're going to be friends. And I think that's probably... using people. No, but that's like, I think that's a very key aspect of like this kind of, any kind of, you know, a math class, a physics class, a computer science class, like those are the things that you kind of build relationships on. And I think that's, you know, when you're dealing with material that's very difficult, like it builds relationships because you're struggling together. So even if I don't know you coming in, we might be really good friends coming out. And that's exactly what's happened. So we want to help build organic relationships. So we don't want to limit kind of interactions between students, but we definitely don't force anything because that's, we found that it's a little bit counterintuitive and it's a little bit actually harmful than, more so than helpful.
And I think that heuristic I proposed yesterday, wherein if two students are sitting next to each other as one is struggling, it's absolutely to be encouraged that the one who isn't struggling at that moment look over at his or her screen and provide some insights, so long as it's, the solution is not, again, pull up his or her own code and just show it outright. And I think that sort of comfort where perfectly fine to look at your seatmate's computer screen, so long as it's in that spirit, I think works well. Jason, do we have a question in back? Why don't we take a couple more questions and then just rapid fire, I'll bite off a few of these. So one, two, three.
I was just gonna say something quickly about getting the students who have to be there interested. I thought that video from Miami, I thought that was very powerful, saying, well, we took a semester of CS50 and now we already have jobs. Yeah. And I thought showing that or things like it, I feel like can really show the power of this class, where it's like, you know, you learn stuff that can very, very much help you later in life, not necessarily in a computer science environment.
I think toward that end, we'll put a section on the wiki about exactly these kinds of stories. In fact, I have a running list of really remarkable social media posts that I've just come across when CS50's gotten tagged or on Facebook. And so we'll share those kinds of things so that you can screenshot or show your students about someone who's had exactly that experience.
I think just to piggyback on that, in terms of motivation for people who don't have to be there, like jobs, I think, is definitely a very compelling aspect. But for me, when I was getting into it,
problem sets like Breakout, like that gets students really excited because that is a game that they play and they think, oh my God, I'm making a game that like I can show my parents that they can play. I can play. This is like Half-Life that I play or StarCraft. I mean, this is like a smaller implementation, but it's very much like it gets people excited. Like they're making something concrete that they can show and it's very much there and it's something they've done. And other problem sets as well, like later in the semester we'll have Speller and you can run your Speller. It's a spell checking kind of program and you can run it against your friends and you want to run fast and use less memory than your friends, and we have this big board that you can compete against each other, and it's very much like, I don't know, other classes where you have problem sets, you do the problem set, you turn it in, but here you can see the results immediately. Like, I will struggle with a problem set, and I will get it, and there's just this sense of accomplishment that comes in just like this wave. It's like, this is done, I did it, awesome. And then I can compare my results to other people, I can show people the programs. Just like the sense of accomplishment you don't get with other classes, I think this is very compelling. And if you show students kind of who don't have to be there some of these programs that they'll be doing, I mean, I think that is a huge factor in what got me interested in what gets a lot of other students at Harvard over this hump of, oh, this is too hard, but look what I can do.
I think to piggyback on kind of both of those, the previous question and what Dad was just saying was, I think that gamification is actually a really powerful motivator, even in my sections when I'm breaking people into small groups or something to, you know, each of you work on this and we'll compare answers at the end, like the winners maybe get some candy or something, like even just a little prize, it's a motivator. It gets people talking, it gets excitement generated, and it doesn't really cost much to go to the Costco and get a bag of candy and throw a couple, you know, Tootsie Rolls at some kids who are doing it. Seriously, it's small motivators like this and gamification of things. Kids respond really well to games, I think, and even college students respond really well to games, and making it a little bit of a competition, but in the spirit of collaborative learning, I think is a really powerful way to get people involved and a really interesting way to split people into groups and work together and work towards a common goal.
And the one caveat there is that while we do have these fun incentives throughout the semester, we very deliberately have no competitive aspect to the hackathon or to the fair. There's no prizes for first place. Every student is intended to exit on the same playing field, even if their starting point was very disparate. Did you have a question here?
Real quick, and then we'll say, if you guys could make those videos that you showed us accessible, that would be pretty neat to show our kids.
Absolutely. Everything's already online, and we will aggregate it on the wiki.
Awesome. But my question had to do with skills. So, like, I'm a teacher, I'm a coach. I always break things down into skills before you perform the big task, play the game, whatever it is. The game here would be like the problem set, these really cool problem sets. Do you intend, or maybe even have it already done, and if you do, I apologize, to break things down in terms of skills? So, for example, for this problem set, you need to know how to do a for loop. And now there are these six little mini problems of how to implement for loops in different ways and whatnot, and just basically emphasizing certain skills, walking through the skills, and then having practice for the students for that particular skill.
I certainly plan on, when the problems are posted, having a list of prerequisites. In terms of skills mapping, like things like student will be competent and demonstrate sufficient competency in, or whatever the terminology is that is most commonly used, I think that's something that Nacho can certainly speak a lot to as well, skills mapping more broadly than just the curriculum.
And that's the more concrete stuff. That's coming in on our radar. It's not going to be ready next month, but okay. The idea of pointing students at greater warm-up exercises, right. Some of which have been historically embedded into the problem sets, but right. We're starting to factor out. So coming in some form, right, for cool. Exactly that reason.
Thank you.
And I keep postponing your hand, and then we'll go over.
So I think that we failed to talk about the most important thing with the whole course, which I think is the unbelievable job you guys have done with branding it. And the biggest thing that I noticed about it was when I walked into the headquarters and I saw all of the postcards and the memories and the flyers framed on the right-hand side of the wall in a very well-designed layout, I might add.
Cheng will be ecstatic when he watches this video.
Now, that's just an example of one of the things that high schools can't do. We don't have $200 to spend on printing for an event, let alone $200 to throw an event. So what are some creative ways that, you know, you could make these events that occur on Harvard campus? I know you're live streaming this event, but things like the CS50 Fair, something that schools across the country could participate in instead of just students at Harvard.
That's one of the exciting opportunities, I think, ahead, is for us to figure out together over the next year or so, where are those synergies? There's certainly some obvious localities where if a couple of schools are in, at least within driving distance, to do joint CS50 fairs. One of the post-its I have here are, is it possible to have students visit if we are a local high school? Absolutely. In fact, we've started doing that with a couple area schools for our CS50 fair. We've had an outreach program with just a dozen or so high school students who come to our hackathon all night, and we're happy to certainly facilitate those kinds of things. And what we're hoping we can do by plotting out where everyone is in the world is to try to do those things either physically proximal or online in some digital form. And for CS50X, for instance, what we've started doing and even expect of the on-campus students is when submitting their final projects, we now require all students on campus and off to submit a 1-2 minute video, a screencast or a cell phone video, wherein they present their project to the world so that we can embrace exactly those kinds of things. And with the posters and whatnot, I would offer two things. One, I would, on behalf of Nacho, encourage you to take her up on her offer, to send her crazy requests and emails to see what she and their team can do. And what I would answer in the same way I answered a teacher in Redmond, where don't underestimate the value of an email out of the blue to someone who might be able to help with your high school class. I mean, we do this all the time, reaching out to friends and alumni in industry or random people whose names we found on a blog who we think would be great to come to campus and give a technical talk, or, hey, might you be able to send us a free Leap Motion device, which then students could use in their final projects. And sending those notes and telling your own story as to how your students will benefit is absolutely to be encouraged, and that's where many of the resources we have come from, is just the graciousness of people we found on the internet. Question?
Hi. In talking to the teachers in the last couple of days, it seems there's some who have the flexibility of developing their own curriculum, or maybe a little looser than someone who's focused on the AP-specific rigid outline. And our school is more of the specific AP focus, and we have some of them piloting the AP-CS Principles course this year. Would you recommend they use the CS50 edX that's already existent, since the wiki still seems to be under construction and not quite ready to go? We're talking 2 to 3 weeks where they're going to start piloting this. And just sort of as an aside, in talking to them, I wish our school was not AP-driven. I'm thinking I would take the CS50 edX as it is, and for every week you have, I'd stretch it to 3 weeks and just take it as it is. So is there any maybe side project of creating another wiki with edX as it is, not geared towards the principal's course? So those two kind of questions.
Sure. So the wiki will point teachers ultimately at the right resources. We do intend, probably with the next offering, that edX will probably be a primary vehicle by which teachers and students can access the material roughly in order. What we will be doing most likely is moving away from the week 0, week 1, week 2 chronological model on the side and making it more milestone-based, like this is Mario, this is Greedy, this is Caesar, this is Visionaire, so that there's not a temporal constraint on teachers in the same way. But we will continue to make literally every resource available on YouTube and iTunes and the course's own website. And because our expectation, too, is that a lot of teachers already have their own websites and might want to craft their own syllabus that simply links to these publicly available resources. And one of the gotchas with edX is that it's a little walled garden. You have to log in. So we'll provide you with pointers to any of the other unlocked resources so that you can do anything you want in terms of the layout of the information for students, but directly linked to our permanent URLs.
And just to comment a little bit about the wiki. So ultimately, the wiki is going to end up being that exploded out variant. And there's a lot of stuff that is not yet linked to the wiki that is being reviewed right now and is just sort of like in beta, like ready to be pushed out. So there's not a ton of links in that sample curriculum or AP curriculum page, which I think is what you're talking about. There are a lot of pages that are just waiting to be pushed out that I haven't been able to do because we've been doing this and getting ready. And Nacho has put a couple of Microsoft interns on mapping this out and exploding all this stuff out. So there is more there than may first appear, but ultimately that wiki does end up being taking a week of edX and kind of exploding it out into three.
And you plan to keep up with that throughout this year so that yes. would be the primary focus?
We're not going to have the whole curriculum mapped out on day zero.
Sure.
This is deliberately designed as a rollout, but my project throughout the year as we are doing this is to keep that going and to keep teachers enough ahead so that they know what's coming and they have the time to prepare and have it all in line for them.
No, we'll soon depart for Cambridge. You'll be hearing from us often, as early as next week as well.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
And I'm going to take one more question, and then I'll pluck off a few of the anonymous questions.
This is actually, it's not a question, but it's just from years of experience I might share with you guys because it might be helpful, and Nacho, you can definitely chime in or know about this. So, in case you guys don't know, as you know, high schools and stuff, you guys know, your principals have got a tremendous amount on their plate. The fact that you have a CS course puts us in the minority. You know, most schools don't even have it. It's French, it's this, it's what's the MCAS score, state standards, all that stuff. And they might be looking at your, like my principal had said to me in the first few years, you got to up your enrollment and up your scores, or we got to get rid of that class and you're going to teach Algebra 2 or whatever else, because they got to work on number. You know what I'm saying? So give that a few years or so, or they need that really bad, that stuff you're talking about, because they got to succeed real fast, right, Nacho? Real fast, like within a year or two, they have to prove themselves. Also, with you guys, APCS, your biggest, I don't know what to say, enemy in a way is AP calculus. That will draw your kids away, because kids have been taking math since kindergarten. They keep marching, and they're not going to stop that march. They'll get away from AP English, AP whatever, but they're not going to stop AP math, if you've noticed. That's the highest enrollment. And if your class is scheduled during that, you'll lose. And when my class was scheduled at the same time as AP Calculus or AP Physics, they're not going to stop taking math or science. So I had a tutor to kids after school or during another class or whatever else to try to prove myself. My principal, for example, and this hopefully helps you guys, 2 years ago stopped. I said, Dana, you got to stop scheduling me against AP Calc and AP Physics. Schedule me against AP Art or AP English. That kid isn't taking me. They're not. I'm sorry, but that's a lie. I'm not taking AP Art. I'm not taking AP Bio. I'm taking what I'm taking. And once when he started doing that, my enrollment went from 22 to 24 to this past year was 28. So he has to hand do it. So get in good with your principal and know those tips that might help you guys. Keep your numbers up.
Well, let me pluck off a few of the questions that were on the board, but not to do disservice to the others. We'll certainly address those as we can over time and online. So one of the feature requests on the board was an interactive online alternative to Appliance, which is also free. So I think we can oblige with that one, per Dan's introduction last night. Another request for one of you is hoping to get new CS Twitter connections. By all means, at CS50 Discuss, feel free to share Twitter handles and whatnot so as to connect with each other more personally or really more publicly. Are there ways to differentiate or customize pace and depth and so forth? And absolutely, and the guidance Doug will be providing over time will address exactly that. We've not really spent time talking about it here, but most of you might know from the syllabus or the first lecture, we do have hacker editions too of many of the problem sets. The course is absolutely designed in particular for those less comfortable and in between, but also with this track within it for those more comfortable. And this takes the form of optional p-sets called Hacker Editions, which explore similar material but from a much more sophisticated angle. They are very deliberately not extra credit problems. They are not tacked on to the end of the standard editions of problem sets. They are distinct documents, watermarked for psychological purposes, with Hacker Edition on every page to really incentivize students to be part of that smaller community and also simultaneously to reassure those less comfortable that they're not in competition with that particular demographic of students, even if they're in the same class or in the same classroom. And as Davin is well aware, we have some dozens of sections on campus led by dozens of teaching fellows, many of which are less comfortable, more in between, and some of which are more comfortable. So we also try to separate those students so that they can, one, explore material at their own pace, but also feel comfortable among classmates who are very similar. Another request was for, or a hope for this weekend, was to jumpstart a path to completing CS50X. And related to that is, what can I do to keep learning after CS50X? I am desperate for more knowledge. So toward these were both opportunities, I think, for me to emphasize that one of the things we hope will prove of value to teachers diving into APCS principles by way of CS50 is the fact that this course already exists and has this robust support structure for anyone taking it, which can include, of course, teachers. And in fact, the most effective professional development for teaching CS50, we think, is taking CS50. And indeed, that is the prerequisite for 99% of our own staff, is to have taken CS50, have done well, and ideally have taken maybe one or two other classes, but we have many sophomores on our our staff who've only taken CS50, and in fact, even Gabe didn't even take CS50 here on campus, the fellow from Brazil from earlier. And by all means, if you're intrepid about going into this, the best thing to do, time permitting, is just dive in head first, because the returns of taking the class and struggling through those problem sets, but conquering those problem sets and making it out on the very end with the final project will absolutely be the highest returns in terms of confidence boosting and comfort going in to a semester.
It's not just for computer science professional development, it's any professional development. The best way to do it is to take this class. It's because it's the best way to force people to learn something again. And one of the reasons why most professional development fails is that we as teachers forget how to learn. And none of us really know, or a large majority of us really don't know computer science, so taking this new course again is the best way to get any teacher to
And to the second question about keep learning after CS50X, I mean, one of the greatest things about the recent glut of interest in educational technologies and all of these MOOCs is that there's so much freely available content out there from MIT and Stanford and Berkeley and Harvard and any number of other places, big and small. And so absolutely go to edX.org, go to Coursera.org, go to iTunes University, email us if you'd like questions. We'll put some links over time on the wiki for exactly this. I mean, there's so many different directions in which you can go. And in fact, too, most of our students, as I mentioned yesterday, for final projects, do go off in very disparate directions, having taught themselves some iOS programming or Android programming, so happy to point folks in those kinds of directions. Myself, I taught a class here at Harvard that was ostensibly about iOS programming and software engineering more generally, and I taught it, I think I said yes to teaching it, and then I went and took Stanford's iPhone class online so as to learn how to do iOS programming, which is just testament to just how rich the freely available resources are out there. And then lastly, are we the first? Yes, you are the first to go through this. I can assure that we've been doing this ourselves for 8+ years, some of us all together, but you're indeed the first. And so we'll be sort of laying down the tracks as we go, but hopefully you'll feel that there's innumerable resources available to you per the fire hydrant from yesterday. I thought we would bookend this discussion here by playing another Muppet video that CS50's production team put together a couple of years ago that was meant to get students excited about the forthcoming hackathon and CS50 fair, for which requisite is to complete your own CS50 final project. So should we take a look at this Muppet film, then we'll take a short break and we'll give things over to Doug for our look at grading.
All right, big thanks to CS50's production team for that one. Why don't we take a few minutes break and we'll be back for grading.